Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. My name is Lee A. Moore. This week's host, Melvin Merritt, talks with Bridget Williamson Mack about her books and her work teaching parents, child care providers, and teachers how to identify and prevent sexual abuse of children. Then, at the end of our show, a commentary, The View from My Front Porch. Now here are Melvin and Bridget Williamson Mack.
Good morning. Welcome to this edition of Jaws of Justice here on KKFI 90.1. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt. This morning, my guest is Ms. Bridget Williamson Mack. She holds a master's degree in counseling and is a licensed professional counselor and a published author of three books. However, we will be focusing on her last book, which is Preventing Childhood Sexual Abuse. She is the CEO and president of Sexual Abuse Prevention Training for Deborah Jail Publishing. Her website is www.deborahjail.com. That's J-A-E-L.com. She is now standing by on the phone in Florida. Welcome this morning, Deborah. You mind if I call you Deborah?
Bridget is fine.
Bridget, okay. All right. One of the first questions I'm going to ask, Bridget, is how do we protect our children and keep their innocence?
It's very easy to do. In this book that we're talking about today, which is A Parental Guide to Preventing Childhood Sexual Abuse, it's a simple guide that helps parents discuss and protect their children from sexual abuse in a non-vulgar, easy-to-read, and understandable, and a traumatic way. It's real easy to just sit your child down and let them know that you're going to be there for them no matter what happens, and they don't need to be fearful, they don't need to be intimidated or scary, and you don't need to be graphic in your description. It's just a simple way of saying, Mommy's going to be here for you, or Grandma's going to be here for you, and if someone touches you in an appropriate manner, please feel free to tell me. And you're going to be a safety net for them to let them know that you're always going to be there for them. You can even use tools such as like cartoons or little stuffed animals and say, for example, if someone is going to be sneaky, you could use a stuffed animal and say, this is like a sneaky weasel. And if a sneaky weasel tries to touch you inappropriately, he'll always going to tell you things like don't tell or keep this a secret. So you don't have to be graphic and you don't have to be hysterical or fearful or traumatize the child. And we give you detailed instructions step by step on how to just break it down and let your child know that you're there for them and they don't need to be fearful or afraid.
Yeah, with our society inundated with so many different negatives, such as television, movies, and things like that. Is that difficult actually across the table or broadly with parents trying to keep their child innocent in that regards to what you were just saying?
I think it's critical that parents probably monitor and sit in and even censor what their children watch. Our society pretty much is overly sexualized, and it's just way too much, and it's way too graphic, even on a child's level, and cartoons. I think it does play a big factor. Parents need to pretty much censor or don't let their children watch certain things, and even cartoons and even commercials are targeted towards things that are sexual in nature. So I would agree with that. I would be very careful as to what I would allow my child to watch.
You and I talked about a couple of things as it related to cartoons. Is there any studies that you've done as it relate to cartoons and certain cartoons that seems to be innocent? And would you know any of the cartoons that kind of have a subliminal message behind it?
Well, I think some cartoons without there's only one that I probably would talk about real briefly. Some cartoons, they're targeted towards children, I think. Shrek is probably one, but I think the audiences probably should be rated probably teenagers and older. When you watch certain things that they specifically show, you know, people kissing or doing things of that nature, and children are not supposed to be kissing or doing things of that nature. It's just inappropriate age-wise. So I think that would probably be the only one that I could mention. That would probably be the only one.
Okay, let's say, for instance, that the child have been touched or have been exposed to some of those negative things. What characters would that child exhibit?
Okay, what you want to look for is probably a regression of earlier behavior. Say, for example, the child used to be a bedwetter and they were okay, or they're no longer bedwetting. You want to look for behaviors such as bedwetting, thumb sucking, sleeping with animals after they had once stopped, things like stranger anxiety or withdrawal, nightmare, feelings of shame, low self-esteem, sadness, depression. And specifically, if a child has explicit knowledge of sexual acts at inappropriate age levels, those are targets. And say, for example, if your child was very outgoing in school and then they become shy or withdrawn, and if that child used to be pretty much easy to get along with and they start displaying large amounts of anger, aggression, or destructiveness, those are some warning signs that you want to look for. And if they're a teenager, even if they're a child, you want to look for unusual interest in or avoidance of all things that are sexual in nature. Say, for example, they used to like going to school. Now they don't want to go to school anymore. And you can even look for it in their drawings, aspects of sexual molestation in drawings, games, fantasies, things of that nature, and even sexually transmitted diseases or pregnancy that are uncommon at certain ages. You want to look for all those things. And if they're like, say, for example, 3 years of age, fear, excessive crying, vomiting, feeding problems, sleep disturbances, or failure to thrive, fear of people or particular places or activities, those are some of the things that you want to look for.
What children, because I noticed that you had it in some paperwork that I've read of yours, what children are targeted for molestation?
There's a pretty much a specific breakdown that you want to look at in the family dynamics. Actually, 90% of convicted child molesters knew their victims. So these were people that were not strangers to them. The statistics say that only 10% of children that they molested were strangers. So in the family dynamics, 19% of those are going to be biological, 30% are going to be stepchildren, adopted or foster children, 12% of those are going to be brothers and sisters, and 18% are going to be nieces and nephews, and 5% are going to be grandchildren. So also in the neighborhood area, which is a high area, 40% of those are a child or a friend or a neighbor. So it's somebody that they know. They're not going to be strangers, and those are the people that you need to be looking at, not necessarily strangers.
So in other words, you're saying that children molest children. In a sense.
Actually, what you want to look at is the definition of a child molester. You want to stick with the medical definition of a child molester. A child molester is considered an adult or a child who is at least 5 years or older than the child that was molested. That's the legal definition when you look at it. And a pedophile is defined as someone who has an ongoing or chronic sexual interest in children. So that would be the legal or the medical definition that you want to stick with.
Let's get it to a higher age. What are some of the behaviors of an adult that who have been molested as a child or and haven't resolved any of those issues?
I think that's really important. Some children who were abused, if they were untreated, may grow up to have severe trust issues. The trust was totally violated, so they might have severe problems with authority figures and trust issues related to the lack of protection surrounding their being abused, especially if the person they were molested by was a parent, a primary caretaker, or even a clergy. If an adult grows up, they may be gifted. I don't want to do blanket statements. Everyone that's molested is not going to act out the same way or have the same symptoms. So an adult may grow up and be very gifted or successful, but the relationships might suffer, and often they make wrong choices based on the lack of trust toward others. And you and I know that incorrect or accurate perceptions can create wrong choices. So if no one valued them growing up, they grow up feeling devalued, and again, they make wrong choices even in going after unhealthy relationships. And this is what's critical. Some abused adults can maintain or they can't maintain long-lasting life relationships if they're abused as children because they have extreme misplaced aggression or suspicion. That marriage partner may be married to that person for a long time and not even know that the person that they're married to was molested because the topic is so taboo. People don't really want to discuss it, and especially males. It's a very, very shameful thing for males, and they're stigmatized, so they may not even speak up. So the adults really owe it to themselves and a person that they want to have a relationship with to get the treatment and not to stuff it. And we know that if you stuff something and you hide it, it's not going to be dealt with, so you can't heal. So they need to take the time and invest in either a personal relationship with someone that they trust that can be appropriate, or go ahead and get some type of professional help.
You know, I commend Tyler Perry for coming out the way that he did and exposing the fact that he was a child that was molested. And he exposed a lot of that information, you know, on national TV. And,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. So that's where the healing process or where it begins, when you point your finger to the problem and you begin to expose those issues. And but I imagine that you have to be in the right setting before you just come out and expose that, because everyone cannot handle that exposure, you know, without raising their eyebrows and so many other different things that people do that don't understand that those feelings and those emotions that a person is going through.
I agree. He helped a lot of people by coming out. Anytime you have a high-profile person, him, Oprah, Joyce Myers, these are people that really, really help people to see that they're not alone. And once you put a spotlight on an issue, then you can begin to deal with it. This is a very touchy subject, especially when it comes to children, and people don't generally like to talk about sexual abuse. And what you mentioned was very, very important, how to get the healing. What do you need to facilitate the healing? And I thought it was really, really important. Some of the things that anonymous survivors of abuse say that they needed the most from parents or caretakers were, they needed these things. They needed to be believed. They needed for someone to pay attention to their pain. They said that they didn't want to be blamed for what happened. It's real, real critical how you respond. They don't want you to tell them to get over it. They don't want you to pretend that nothing happened. And they really want you to sit with them in their pain. And it's real critical that adults accept responsibility for not protecting a child. Even though you do everything that you can, that child needs to know, okay, mommy needs to say, I should have validated it, that you were hurting. I don't need to excuse it. And they don't want you to tell them to get over it. They want to know that their needs come first. It's a hysterical type of thing. Naturally, if a child comes to you, you might be upset and you might want to be hysterical, but the child wants to know that their needs come first. And you need to make sure that the child feels physically and emotionally safe. And the child wants amends to be made. And this is really critical. Don't expect the child to associate or see their abuser. I've had instances and our case studies have shown where parents have told the child to be strong. You can be in their presence. There's some unrealistic expectations or things that can do more damage than harm. They need to give that child the time to heal at their age level. So you brought up a very, very valid point about how healing is facilitated.
Right. And, you know, I know this young lady that is in a situation because, you know, that is beyond her control. She stays with her mother, and her stepfather for years had molested her, and she still don't get that, you know, that validation from her parent or her mother, and her mother somewhat blames her. And yet she can't come out of that situation because financially she's in a situation where she has to live with that person that had been molesting her ever since when she was a child. And so she lives it every day. What would you tell someone that possibly might be in that same situation? What should they do?
I actually would speak to the adult. If that person cannot stay in that situation, I probably would advise them going to, it's kind of dire straits when you're put in a situation emotionally that you're not supposed to be in. I would advocate for them finding some type of public or social assistance programs. There are different type of agencies that they can contact to facilitate finding independent living. Say, for example, if this person is 16 or 17 years of age, that person can then become emancipated minor, or a person that can go through the process of becoming emancipated. If they're an adult, I would 100% advocate them finding some type of alternative living arrangement, because what you're doing is you're re-traumatizing that person over and over again, and it's an unrealistic and it's kind of a cruel thing to make a person live with the person that abused them and pretend that nothing didn't happen. That's psychologically, that's more damaging and that's more harmful. So I would advocate public assistance by any means necessary in a safe, non-traumatic way that they can go ahead and just not be in that situation. It's not a situation that they should be placed in.
So if you're in a setting like, let's say, for instance, you're counseling and people are kind of withdrawn about bringing that in, bringing that up, because as you alluded to the fact that they, you know, it's a taboo subject. So how would you bring that out? And if you were in a setting with other adults, and what would be the mechanism, if for lack of a better word, to bring that subject, not only bring the subject up, but to get an individual to start talking about something that they may have been a victim of?
In a counseling setting, you're always going to want to follow that client and follow their lead. You don't want to take them at a pace that they're not ready for. Mm-hmm. And we know in any relationship, especially the counseling relationship, if you don't have a trust with that counselor or that person, anyone, even if you're not in a counseling setting, it's not going to be productive for you to bring it up until they're ready. If you force them, they're going to go in, sigh, and they're going to shut down. You want to wait until they're ready. You can watch for signs even in a child situation. Children are going to manifest, and even adults, some type of behavior or warning sign that's going to indicate it, but you can't push them ahead of the time. You can ask questions like, when you feel like it's appropriate, have you been touched inappropriately? When it's appropriate, you can be non-threatening, non-judgmental, and do it at their time frame and their level. Because if you do it too soon and there's no trust established, they don't have a reason to open up to you. That's pretty much the common sense thing. If we're in a relationship with anyone, until I find out that I can trust this person and this person is not going to judge me, I'm not going to divulge that information.
You wrote in your book about certain things or behavior of an adult, and you mentioned things like insisting on hugging, touching, and could you elaborate on that?
Sure. Adult behaviors that may signal a sexual interest in your children will be things like they insist on hugging, touching, kissing, tickling, wrestling, or holding a child, even when the child doesn't want that affection. And if you see someone that's overly interested in the sexuality of a particular child or a teen, and this is a big warning, if they want to always manage to some kind of way spend time alone or insist in spending time alone without interruptions with the child, and even simple things like regularly offering to babysit with different children for free or take children on overnight outings. And here's another big one. They buy children expensive gifts or give them money for no apparent reason, even when you've said no. And these are the type of people who like to push buttons. And if I can just give you a little bit of a profile, child molesters gravitate to people who are most likely to be too polite to fend them off, or too shy or anxious to tell them to leave. They're too dependent to be assertive and too impressed by rank or power or status to speak up. And child molesters always deliberately associate with adults who cannot address these issues. And they always place themselves in jobs or positions where they can have frequent contact with children. And they seek adults who worry about hurting people's feelings, or they charm adults who believe that it can't happen. The main thing that a child molester looks for is you're banking on, A, they're not going to speak up. You're not going to press charges. You're not going to make a big fuss. You don't want to make a big scene. So they look for people that are too inhibited to speak up. And I really, really advocate for all parents doing background checks. You can go to the Sex Offenders Registry. There are 39 million adult survivors of childhood sexual molestation. So the numbers are large. And statistically, there are almost 800,000 registered sex offenders in the United States. So parents want to be advocates, and it's okay to tell people that you don't know or strangers that come into your life, if you're a parent, that I am probably going to do a little bit of investigating to find out if your background is okay before I let you spend time with my child. You have to be proactive rather than reactive. You want to be assertive. You can be polite and upfront and cordial, but you want to let them know your child's safety and your child's protection is the number one priority in your life, and you're not just going to be a person that's going to be passive and just hand your child off to someone that you don't know. So I recommend being very proactive with that.
We mentioned about manipulative pedophiles. What about pedophiles that try to pull in the adults by purchasing gifts and things like that for the adults so they can get to the child? In other words, they're softening the adult up.
That's a wise point. You always want to, this is the rule of thumb, if someone, not trying to be paranoid or be, I guess the best word is paranoid, if someone or something appears to be too good to be true, people say, then it usually is. That's a very valid point. They will bait you, give you gifts, do anything that they can to get your guard down and your defenses down to appear as if they are something that they are not. Not all situations. I don't want to be paranoid, but you really need to do the background work. Find out, where did this person come from? Find out, where did this person live? Find out if this person has an illegal charges, or do an investigation. Hire, if you can, you don't even have to hire anyone. You can go on the computer to the Child Sexual Offense Registry, Child Abuse Sexual Offense Registry for Adult Sexual Offenders that are registry, is what I should call it. And you can look up for free whether or not this person is a child molester. Any person that comes into your life that you don't know, even a teacher at school, because we know now statistics show every day, every single day, there is a clergy person or a teacher or a coach, Sandusky, perfect example, someone in the public eye who works with children who have been convicted as being a child molester. People in the past who we used to think were safe with our children because of their title or because of their position, we can no longer assume that they're safe. My saying is, if this person does not have a proven track record of being not a child molester, not being a sexual abuser, then it's not there. If the history's not proven over time and over years, then that fact does not exist that they're trustworthy.
Thank you, Bridget. We only have about a half a minute left on the broadcast, and I want to go ahead on and give your website. Can you do that real quick?
Sure. They can find us at Deborah J.L. Publishing, and that's spelled Deborah J.L. Publishing.com. And I wanted to say one other thing, if I might. We offer sexual abuse prevention services that, A, empower parents and clinical professionals through detailed multi-level curriculum, educate community agencies via extensive childhood sexual prevention training, and we eliminate abuse systematically via task force and community collaboratives. And our business partner, our prevention services, we offer very comprehensive sexual adult harassment prevention training, which is designed at preventing lawsuits of sexual misconduct in the church, and we provide our services nationwide. And they can just reach us at DeborahJLPublishing.com and just do a simple Google search.
Thank you, Bridget. You have been in tune to KKFI 90.1 right here, and you've been listening to Jaws of Justice, and I have been your host, Melvin Merritt.
This is Jeff Humfeld with the view from my front porch. Although others here at KKFI or among the volunteers of Jaws of Justice Radio may share my views, they come from me and me alone. I wish I had the words that I could express adequately the sorrow in my heart for the parents and families that lost their loved ones in the senseless killing spree in Connecticut last week. Likewise, I do not have those comforting words for the families and loved ones of the other people that were senselessly murdered last week across America and here in our own community. I am too baffled, too confused by our inability as a society to do what must be done. to even have a serious dialogue about what must be done. To find the words that could assure these people that it won't happen again. On the news the other night, I was listening to all the speculation and information about the madman that committed this latest atrocity, only to hear the report of a mother and a child gunned down in the street just blocks from my home. There will be no national coverage of this woman and her child because they were shot by a criminal, not by a madman. The madman is a symptom of a deeper societal problem that we as a country refuse to look at in the light of day. We are a society that was born out of violence. We glorify violence. We drink violence in like it was water from the fountain of youth. When our American drones kill children on the other side of the world, there is no angry moralizing because we are killing the enemy. We are killing the madman over there so he can't come here and kill our children. To the madman here, our children were the enemy. We, as a society and as individuals, need to question our priorities. How important is mental health on a community level and on a personal level? Did we have the services available for the madman among us? Were those services accessible? Talk to almost any county sheriff or state penitentiary warden in this country, and they will admit that their facilities are filled with people who need mental health services. Would those people be better served in a different type institution? If we built those institutions instead of prisons, will we keep the madmen off of our streets? Do we have the resources and political will to keep him from getting guns? The time is long past for us to have a serious and reasoned discussion about the role of guns in our society. Guns are inextricably entwined in our frontiersman heritage and history, but I do not think most people want to live in the lawless Wild West. A complete ban on gun ownership is neither advisable nor constitutional. While our Constitution does give the individual the right to bear arms, what precedes that right in the Second Amendment is the phrase well-regulated militia. I feel we as a society have a constitutional responsibility to regulate gun ownership and use. Just as arming everyone will not protect us from the madmen, taking guns away from everyone will not make us safe either. We have come to a point where we use our differences to demonize each other rather than use our commonalities to strengthen our communities. In these times, patriotism is mixed up with religion, and giving selflessly to others is considered a political statement rather than an act of charity. If we ever hope to truthfully be able to say to the families of the madman's victims, "We won't let this happen again," we will have to do a lot of soul searching and resolve to hold each other with the same love and sense of responsibility as we do those children in Connecticut. That is the view from my front porch.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Mid-Coast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff or volunteers. If you have comments or questions, check us out on Jaws of Justice page, radio page on KKFI website, www.kkfi.org. You can join the Jaws of Justice Radio group. Email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. My name is Keith Brownhill. We thank our engineer, Mike Murphy. Listen in tomorrow at 9 a.m. for Law and Disorder. Ethan Nettleman
of the Drug Policy Alliance and Glenn Ford of the Black Agenda Report. Coming up next this week on KKFI, Thursday at 9:30 a.m. on Making Contact, reporter Nancy Mullane talks with California death row inmates and activists about where the death penalty abolition movement goes next. Saturday at 2:30 p.m. on Wings, songs and stories of sexual violence survivors, including music from video from the video Voices and Faces Project CD, and accept excerpts from the film Invisible War about military sexual assault. Up next is Counterspin, followed at 10 a.m. by Beautician Blues with Luscious Lane, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon at Echo Radio, KC, 6 p.m.